Get Sleepy is a production of Slumber Studios and is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors and premium members. If you'd like to listen ad-free and access weekly bonus episodes, extra-long stories, and our entire back catalogue, you can try out Premium free for 7 days by following the link in the episode notes. Now, a quick word from our sponsors. The origins of this podcast were once just a dream, and that dream turned into the show you're listening to today. Starting your own business is a dream lots of us share, but too many of us let it remain just a dream. Don't hold yourself back thinking, what if I don't have the skills? What if I can't do it alone? Turn those what-ifs into why-nots with Shopify by your side. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world, from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started. Shopify helps you find your customers with tools like easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. And if you ever get stuck or need some assistance, Shopify's award-winning customer support is there for you 24/7. So turn those dreams into reality and give them the best shot at success with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/getsleepy. Go to shopify.com/getsleepy. shopify.com/getsleepy.
Did you know it only takes a moment to start the Lexus ES from your smartwatch? Which is the same amount of time it takes to cement your status as unforgettable. With features like the available 12.3-inch touchscreen multimedia display to the spirited V6 engine, the Lexus ES makes every second count. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Hey friends, welcome to Get Sleepy, where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. As always, I'm your host, Thomas. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll be reading to you this evening, and I'd like to thank Frankie for writing this and every story from this series. Continuing our way through the ancient Greek pantheon, we will meet the eldest child of Zeus and Hera, the king and queen of the gods. His name is Hephaestus, and he is the god of the forge, metalworks, smithies, fire, and volcanoes. It is from the flames of his eternal forge that Prometheus stole fire for humanity. He is the divine armor and weapons master of the gods. Yet, despite his fearsome description, Hephaestus is regarded as mild, kind, and dedicated to acts of service for the gods and mortals he cares for. If you'd love more content from Get Sleepy and the very best listening experience, be sure to check out our member subscription, Get Sleepy Premium. Tomorrow night, in our weekly premium exclusive episode, Heather will be reading to us as we join a woman running some errands before settling down for an afternoon nap. To find out more about all the perks of being a Get Sleepy Premium member, like ad-free listening, early access to episodes, discount on merchandise, and plenty more, just visit the link in the description. Thank you so much for your support. Now then, we'll soon join Hephaestus in the warm glow of his forge. But first, let's enjoy a moment to unwind and relax. You lie in your bed, cradled by pillows and blankets. This is a place of comfort, rest, and peace. Take a moment to appreciate the safe haven that is your bed. Feel your body relax. Every muscle and joint releasing the tension of the day. You can rest now. Breathe deeply, taking in as much air as your lungs can hold, and then releasing it in a steady, controlled stream. Keep the rhythm gentle and extended. With each calming breath you take, your body slips deeper into peace, becoming one with the bed itself. If your mind wanders to the busy places of the day, gently draw it back to your breath. And now, imagine the warm glow of a fire. Picture the flickering orange flame, the glimmering bright coals, and the heat that washes over you. This fire is special. It lives in all of us because it came from a divine forge. It is time to meet the one who stokes the eternal fire. This is where our story begins. Day and night, sound comes from the forge. Perhaps it's the sound of the bellows pumping to heat the embers. Or maybe it is the sound of loud voices issuing instructions to one another. Most often, it is the steady rhythm of the hammer on the anvil. The sound rings across all of Mount Olympus, particularly when the master of the forge and god of metalworking, Hephaestus, is crafting something brilliant. Hephaestus has the huge muscles and calm demeanor of one who works with metal. He is patient, never rushing his work. He is soft-spoken when outside of the forge, as if trying to keep the balance between the sound of work and the sound of leisure. And although he works with armor, weapons and the like, he himself is peace-loving and mild. See him now in his forge. Granted, it is difficult to see through the gleaming white light, but he is there at the anvil. He hammers the writhing snakes of pure light that dance around the forge. Hephaestus is assisted in his work by three giants, each with one eye. These are the Cyclopes, whose names are Brontes, the Thunder, Steropes, the Lightning, and Arges, the Lightning Flash. They are children of the primordial sky god Uranus and earth goddess Gaia, making them great uncles of Hephaestus. The Cyclopes sided with Zeus during the battle between the Titans and the gods. This loyalty earned them a place on Mount Olympus, where their immense strengths and skills of craft could be put to work. Before Hephaestus was born, they were considered the greatest metalworkers in existence. They created a helmet of invisibility for Hades, and Poseidon's trident, which can create whirlpools, tidal waves, and earthquakes. Even now, they are helping Hephaestus to tame the pure lightning that he hammers. The four of them are making thunderbolts to replenish the arsenal of Zeus, king of the gods, and Hephaestus's father. As Hephaestus hammers the lightning, it bursts even brighter with each stroke. The heat from the forge is immense. Hephaestus and the Cyclopes are all shining with sweat. After long minutes of hammering, Hephaestus orders that the bolt be cooled in a barrel of pure rainwater. Brontes uses tongs larger than the tallest pine tree to pick up the lightning bolt and immerse it in a huge barrel of purest rainwater. The air is immediately filled with a cloud of warm, thick steam. The four divine beings take this moment to have a break and make their way out of the forge to sit in the bright sunshine of the mountain top. Hephaestus and the Cyclopes pass around an amphora of nectar, the honey-like drink of the gods. Hephaestus looks down the slopes of the mountain to the world below. His godly eyes can see far beyond the limits of mortal eyes. He sees not just the landscape, but also the fires of every forge in the world. He feels the roiling depths of the volcanoes scattered here and there. He hears the ringing of thousands of hammers on thousands of anvils. Some smiths are busy with the necessary work of everyday life. They are making horseshoes, repairing farm equipment, or sharpening weapons. Others, the true craftspeople, are making great pieces of art, things that will make other humans marvel to behold. All metal workers are under the protection of Hephaestus, and as long as they keep their fires hot, he will look over them. Hephaestus allows the sweet golden liquid to trickle down his throat. The sun warms his tired muscles, and he glances into the sky. One of the very first things he made was for Helios, the sun god. Hephaestus was still a young deity and had only just learned from the Cyclopes how to make Zeus's thunderbolts. Helios came to see the young god and explained his problem. For millennia, Helios had traveled across the sky each day in a huge golden cup. While this was a reliable way to bring the sun across the sky, it was not the most divine. When Helios joined the side of the gods during the War of the Titans, Zeus gave him 4 brilliant white horses. The horses' names were Pyreos, the fiery one, Eos, of the dawn, Aethon, the blazing, and Phlegon, the burning. The horses, while incredibly beautiful, were unruly and barely handleable, even by Helios. He needed a chariot that would bear the heat of the sun and the fury of his divine horses. Hephaestus took the job at once, determined to prove himself as the smith of the gods. He visited the palace of the sun in the far east. The rose and gold-colored palace was beautiful. Even the stables were shining with the colors of the sun. As soon as Hephaestus approached, he could hear the snorting of the horses and feel the warmth of their bodies. Keeping a respectful distance, Hephaestus observed the horses. He took note of their height and strength. He made calculations of the size and durability of the chariot needed. When he had everything, Hephaestus went back to his forge. He decided to work with pure gold for the chariot. It would reflect the light of the sun down upon the earth and please the vain horses. He wove magic and the enchantment of the gods into every piece of the chariot so it would be indestructible. It took him a week to finish his work. Normally, he would work through the night, but for this piece, he would only work on it under the light of the sun, still being taken across the sky by Helios in his cup. Finally, the chariot was finished. One evening, Hephaestus took it to the palace of the sun to present it to Helios. The sun god was impressed. The two huge wheels of the chariot were decorated with fiery beams of light for the spokes. Every bit of it gleamed gold with a warm light that seemed to radiate from the inside out. The true test, however, was whether it would bear the horses of the sun. Together, Hephaestus and Helios prepared the horses. As soon as the bridles were on, the normally fearsome horses grew tame and calm. Helios was overcome with joy. At that moment, his sister Eos, goddess of the dawn, came hurrying past the two gods, ready to throw open the doors of dawn ahead of this new chariot. Helios got into his chariot and felt, for the first time, that he was complete. Hephaestus watched as Helios took his first ride across the world to the Palace of the West, with a glow in his chest. What better introduction to his work could the world ask for than the shining chariot of the sun? Hephaestus returns from his thoughts with a smile. That was a long time ago now. He has made many pieces since. Many have been instruments of war, weapons, armor, and shields have been born in his forge and handed over to gods and mortals alike. But one of the most powerful things he ever created was for the goddess of love. As if called into being by his very thoughts, Aphrodite appears from around the corner and approaches the forge. She is the goddess of love and beauty, and the sight of her brings forth a sigh of contentment from Hephaestus and the Cyclopes. Aphrodite greets Hephaestus warmly. She is his wife and official consort. But Hephaestus knew when he married her that this was not to be a traditional marriage. Where Hera, his mother, demands complete devotion from his father Zeus, Hephaestus is content with occasional companionship from Aphrodite. He knows that the goddess of love cannot simply love one being. Aphrodite brings Hephaestus a basket of fruits, cheeses, and bread as lunch. They share this meal together in front of the forge, catching up with one another. This is a marriage of companionship, for both divine beings are devoted wholeheartedly to their jobs in the world. Hephaestus sees the glittering belt around Aphrodite's waist and smiles. Though she may have many lovers, he knows her most prized possession is that belt. When they were first married, Hephaestus was still quite shy around her. He wanted to present her with something that would show the depth of his affection and devotion. He felt that jewelry was overdone. He wanted to craft something for her that she could imbue with her own powers. After many days of making plans and prototypes to no avail, Hephaestus finally went to Aphrodite to ask her what she would like. Taken aback by his sweet directness, Aphrodite took a long moment to respond. The two of them went to the forge together and drew up the plans for her gift. He formed and shaped silver and gold while she procured precious stones from Hades, the god of the underworld and wealth. Aphrodite was in the forge with Hephaestus as much as she could be in those days. Through the hours of labor together, they formed a friendship and companionship that would go on to serve as the unshakable foundation of their marriage for years to come. Finally, when their work was done, Hephaestus presented Aphrodite with the gift in front of the entire population of Mount Olympus. The belt was made of tiny, delicate loops and scales that moved together seamlessly. It was as if the metal belt was actually made from purest silk. Along the band were pink amethysts, red rubies, and pure diamonds to catch the light. Little silver flowers were formed so beautifully that they looked impossibly real. Aphrodite poured part of her powers into the belt, so that she might lend it to gods and mortals to ease their paths of love. Returning from his memory, Hephaestus watches as Aphrodite gathers up the remnants of their lunch. Soon, she bids him goodbye. The Cyclopes return to the forge to finish the lightning bolts for Zeus. As they get back to work, they assure Hephaestus that they do not need his assistance. Hephaestus sits on his own for a few moments. Idle time is not something he is familiar with. The god of the forge looks down at his large hands and wonders what he should apply himself to in the meantime. Perhaps he could make a gift for one of his family members. But what? And for whom? Looking for inspiration, Hephaestus casts his mind back to some of the gifts he has made in the past. One of the most fantastic was the sandals and helmet he created for his brother Hermes. Hephaestus remembers the first time he saw his little brother. The baby, though only a day old, was already talking and had spent his first full day of life rustling cattle, inventing musical instruments, and charming nearly everyone he met. He charmed Hephaestus too. The little god showered the naturally modest Hephaestus with so many compliments about his work that Hephaestus retired to his forge to get away from such attention. Immediately, Hephaestus knew he must create something for Hermes. It was a difficult task because no one was yet sure what powers would develop in a god so young. Hermes was certainly silver-tongued, and, Hephaestus thought to himself, he was also quick of mind if his accomplishments to date were anything to go by. The little god was quick in nearly every way. Surely he would like something to make himself even quicker. Hephaestus had been sitting beside his forge on that day when he contemplated what to make for Hermes. The perfect idea struck him as he saw a gerfalcon speed through the air, diving for some unseen prey below. Hephaestus took to his feet and went to work with renewed purpose. He acquired the purest gold and spent many days fashioning individual feathers. He studied the wings of the fastest birds on earth, determining how their design contributed to their speed. He constructed small golden wings which fluttered around his workshop. They glistened and glinted in the warm light of the forge. Two of the wings he attached to leather sandals, enchanted so that the leather would never wear out and would mold perfectly to the foot of the wearer. The sandals were fine, Hephaestus had to admit, but sandals alone didn't feel like enough for Hermes. In the past few days, the young god had already shown a new talent for trickery, language, athletics, and wit. So many of his powers seemed to come from fast thinking and intelligence. Hephaestus set to work again. This time, he fashioned wings for a petasos to match the sandals. Hephaestus formed a wide-brimmed hat from leather and attached two more golden wings to it. He had debated with himself for a while about whether to make a hat or a helmet. But Hermes appeared to be a god of travelers, crossroads, and boundaries. This is not a battle god, and a helmet would do him no good. A common traveling hat would better suit him. When Hephaestus was happy with the gifts, he sought out his little brother. Hermes practically leapt for joy when he saw the gifts. Now, many years later, they are Hermes' iconic accessories. They assist him in his duties as a messenger and guide for lost souls. Hephaestus wonders to himself if he could possibly ever match the craftsmanship of those gifts. He enjoyed making them because, like Aphrodite's belt, they were tools of power and not of war. By far the most dangerous gift he ever made was for Aphrodite's son, Eros. Eros is a god of love and one who takes his responsibilities seriously. When he was maturing, Aphrodite came to Hephaestus, asking him to make something for her eldest child. Hephaestus agreed, as Eros was his stepson. He went down to the athletic field on Mount Olympus to speak to the boy. Eros was practicing archery with some of the other younger deities. Hephaestus watched for a while. While Artemis and Apollo were better shots than Eros, it wasn't by much. The young god of love stood tall and proud as he shot, his large white wings folded neatly against his body. Hephaestus decided to make the boy a bow, arrows, and a special quiver. Before he started work, Hephaestus discussed the plans with Eros. He impressed on the young man the importance of this responsibility. These were not to be a normal set of bow and arrows, which were already risky gifts in the first place. These were to be imbued with Eros's powers as a god of romantic love. Eros listened carefully to Hephaestus. At the end of their discussion, he promised solemnly to be careful with his gift. Satisfied, Hephaestus got to work. At first, he created a batch of pure golden arrows. They were fast and true, and filled with the power of pure love. Anyone who was pricked by them would fall in love with the next person or being that they saw. Hephaestus also made a special quiver to hold the arrows. It was formed and shaped to fit over Eros's torso and rest between his great white wings. Again, Hephaestus paused at the end of his labors and considered the gift. It seemed to be missing something. Hephaestus thought about love. It was powerful, but not the only powerful emotion that Eros could create. There is a thin line between love and hate. Hephaestus made one more arrow for the quiver, a black arrow of lead that would create hatred in the target. When Hephaestus presented the finished quiver, arrows, and ornate silver bow to Eros, he explained the use of the arrows. "This is the most dangerous gift I have ever made," he told the young god, "because every living being can fall into love or into hatred. Use your power well." And Eros heeded his stepfather for a while. One night, however, he was sent to shoot the mortal Psyche with a love arrow and accidentally pricked himself. Eros fell in love with Psyche immediately. Hephaestus brings his mind back to the here and now, chuckling to himself. Love is more powerful than anything else he has come across. Eros had to learn that the hard way. None of these ruminations on his past works have inspired Hephaestus in the least. He feels the fiery urge for creativity burning in his chest. He merely needs a source of inspiration. His eye is caught by a figure approaching his forge. As the figure draws nearer, he recognizes Thetis, a Nereid and old friend of Hephaestus. The water nymph rarely comes up to Olympus, so Hephaestus is surprised to see her here. Thetis smiles warmly and greets the god. She tells him that she has come to ask a favor. She needs a new shield for her mortal son, Achilles. Hephaestus is immediately interested. He has heard about the bravery of her son many times. Hephaestus agrees to make a shield for the young man. He sets to work immediately, distractedly saying goodbye to Thetis. Achilles is a young hero of humanity. His shield needs to represent as much of humanity as possible. He starts the design with the sea, earth, and stars. He includes several of the major constellations and star deities. He inlays the shield with two impressive cities, one in peace and one at war. Next, he places three panels exhibiting the sowing of seeds, the harvest, and the cultivation of crops. Finally, the entire design is encircled by the waves of the ocean. Hephaestus makes the details of the design in bronze, gold, and silver. He expertly weaves the metals together so that the shield looks more like a shining painting than an artifact made from metal. Hephaestus barely notices time passing as he works. He can feel the pure energy of creativity and craftsmanship flowing through him. Nothing is more satisfying than using his hands, skills, and mind to create something. When he finally finishes the shield, Hephaestus takes a step back to admire it. He sees movement in the reflection of the shield and turns to find Thetis. She is smiling, tears of joy in her eyes. This is truly the greatest, most beautiful thing he has ever made, and it is for a mortal. Hephaestus hands the shield to his friend. He thinks about all those other artifacts he has made for his fellow gods. They are, each one, lovely, beautiful, and marvelous. But, like so many other gods, Hephaestus finds that his best work is to be given to humanity. They are the source of inspiration and unconditional love that drives every god to do something truly spectacular.